Show Architects, dedicated to defining spaces and creating downtown places across the Midwest, on the web at ratioarchitects.com. Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, featuring the exotic visual soundscape of the world-renowned Kronos Quartet and the solo artistry of Van Cliburn Piano Competition winner Alexander Kobrin. Visit KrannertCenter.com for more information. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Dana Buckman, do you recognize the name? She's a successful clothing designer and entrepreneur. She's also a wife and mother. She and her husband, Tom Farber, are the parents of two daughters, Charlotte and Annie. Their firstborn, Charlotte, has some serious learning disabilities. In this portion of the program, we'll hear how the Buckman family struggle to find the right specialist and make the best education choices for Charlotte. We'll also talk about what the Buckman-Farber family discovered about themselves and one another along the way. Dana Buckman is the author of the memoir, A Special Education, One Family's Journey Through the Maze of Learning Disabilities. Buckman says having a child with what she now calls learning differences rather than learning disabilities is challenging on many levels, but she also says it has brought her to greater awareness in life and ultimately to greater happiness. That, she says, will happen if you learn from what you're going through. Listeners, I invite you to join our discussion this afternoon with your questions and comments. Join us with a telephone call. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. If you're outside the Champaign-Urbana area, you may use our toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Dana Buckman's line of women's fashion is one of the most widely distributed labels in the country. Her label can be found in every major department store in the U.S. Her book, A Special Education, One Family's Journey Through the Maze of Learning Disabilities, is published by DeCapo Press. Dana Buckman is donating all proceeds from the sale of the book to the National Center for Learning Disabilities. Again, the phone number is 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Dana, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
It's great to be here, Celeste.
My pleasure to have you as a guest on the program. You begin the introduction to the book, A Special Education, by saying, "Once upon a time, you were perfectly behave." What were those days like?
Those days on the surface looked just perfect. In fact, those days ran up to 1986 when I started my own label as a fashion designer. I had just been married a year to this unbelievably fabulous man, and I had an adorable little newborn girl. Life was perfect, and so was I.
Yeah, but it wasn't long, and things started to fall apart.
It wasn't. I remember, actually, the time. It was about 8 months. Charlotte was about 8 months old, and we realized that she wasn't hitting the milestones. You know, we were first-time parents, so we were reading all the right books, Dr. Spock and the more recent ones, and Charlotte wasn't crawling. And we were thinking, okay, sometimes that happens. And then she wasn't speaking very clearly. And then by a year and a half, she still wasn't walking. And we'd be at the park and look at the other little kids doing their thing and looking at Charlotte and starting to feel this anxiety and this uh-oh move in. Well, being an expert at perfection, I just put those feelings right away and thought, well, we'll just see. Let her develop when she develops and don't worry about a thing. But finally it came to a point when, and I give this to my husband, Tom, he said, we really should ask around. So we actually asked Charlotte's dentist because we were most concerned about her speaking at that point. And she kind of laughed and said, no, it's not a dental problem, but referred us to a speech therapist who advised that we get Charlotte tested.
Yeah. And what was the result of that testing?
Well, the testing itself, I had never seen such a thing. It involved 7 different visits. We live in Manhattan, so we went to Columbia Presbyterian, this very imposing structure on the Upper West Side, this little tiny, you know, 5-year-old, 3-year-old girl, test after test after test. And the result was what is called a diagnosis, but where the doctor said that she is at risk for learning disabilities. It looks like she might have ADD. It looks like she might have trouble here. Just, it was really just, after all that testing, it wasn't a diagnosis like I was used to, which is, do you have chicken pox or you don't?
Right.
This was more just, she's at risk.
Yeah, and also that word might. So what do you do with that as a parent?
Well, I burst into tears first, first thing. And then I went back to my lifelong training of rolling up my sleeves and fixing it. I took one moment, had a moment, my moment of grief, and then I thought, okay, so what do? We can fix it. Let's see what we can do. We got her some speech therapy to start, and then we started looking for schools. The doctor said she might need to go to a special school. The idea of a special school, oh my, I remember that awful green doctor's office, no windows. I was in a upset mood anyway, and hearing special school, I thought it was sentencing Charlotte to Siberia. I had been to a big raucous public school in Memphis, Tennessee, and, you know, lots of diversity and fun and things to do, and I thought, ugh. But if that's what had to be, then by gosh, we'd find the best special school we could. So I put on my, search hat and took that on as a project.
Yeah. That's the way you've tackled a lot of things in your life.
It is. It was, I should say. And it was only later that I realized that that's not all bad. I mean, I think it probably has contributed to certain good things, like a company and people can count on me. But it's a little one-dimensional, and that's what I write about in the book, that you do need some kind of tiger skills. But the one-dimensionality I went into is not the way to go if you find your child has special needs.
Yeah. You've achieved so much. And in the book, you describe yourself as a young woman, as someone who wanted to be Superwoman. And it seemed to you that you'd be able to pull it off. You could launch your first collection and care for a baby. And, you know, the clothing business is a tough one.
It's a nightmare. Right?
And so many working parents will tell you that it's tough going back to work after having a baby. They love that baby. So what were your days like?
Well, I had come of age in college in the early 70s, a rabid feminist. I mean, not really rabid, but very intrigued with the idea that, yes, we women have to work, and it's important to not to falter, not to look weak, not to say, I can't. So the garment industry I was sort of used to by then, by the time my label launched. I had never had my own label, so that was a huge amount of pressure. But the baby, oh my goodness, when you haven't had a baby, and I had never been around children that much, I couldn't believe how much time and just attention was involved. And then, of course, when Charlotte turned out to have LD, it was like triple the amount. So there was quite a lot of juggling, a lot of it came out of my time. I would get up in the night sometimes and work from like 2 to 4 in the morning because that's when it was quiet, give Charlotte the bottle. I was just spinning, trying to keep it all juggling. And I know moms have felt this since the beginning of time, and I feel like I just got a triple dose of it.
Yeah. Well, Charlotte was just a little more than a year old when you became pregnant with Annie.
That's right. And then having 2 is like having 10. Who knew? I think if we mothers knew, we wouldn't procreate, maybe, how much was involved. With Annie, when I brought her home from the hospital, And I was there one day with the new baby and Charlotte running around and the neighborhood kids, and I went right back to work. I think I was out of work for 5 days total. Mm-hmm. Because it was, at least the fashion industry was a kind of franticness I understood, I knew.
Yeah, so it sounds like maybe you were doing, hiding out there a little bit.
I was a little, I realized later, because, you know, at work people are kind of semi-adults, and we kind of have an understanding, and the whole child-rearing, it was tough for me.
Yeah. Now, at this time, did you consider at all slowing down, or adjusting your goals?
Never crossed my mind. I mean, having my own label was something I had dreamed of. I hadn't even dared to dream of. It was a Cinderella story.
Yeah.
My mentor and dear friend Liz Claiborne decided to open this more expensive price collection. She asked, would you like to design it? I mean, that's out of the movies. So I loved that. I also loved having children. I had been desperately excited to have children. I just hadn't realized how much effort the two combined would be. But no, it never crossed my mind to slow down. Of course, yeah. On the child, you can't stop. And then the collection, I love fashion.
Yeah. You know, one of the things you say in the book is that you seem to have so much. And truly, you did and you do. Two beautiful daughters, a great husband, full-time help, enough money, health insurance, and more. I wonder if that played into your keeping at everything in the intensity that you did, because that, you know, given all that you had, you couldn't slow down.
You know, I've never thought of it like that. I have always felt blessed, and as writing this book, I knew that some of the physical circumstances of my life are not universal. And, you know, this is also part of my psyche. I felt, what are you whining about? Mm. But I did, you know, no matter what your economic or your career circumstances, there is an emotional part of every human being. And it can be happy or sad or has its ups and downs. So in the book, I was telling the emotional story of it, hoping that it'll resonate with women and men of all different circumstances. I did hide out, and I mean, I did feel blessed. I have always thought one should work, that it was sort of, I never thought of just kind of sitting at home and eating bonbons. Not that women who sit at home really get to do that. It's not really what it's like. But it was emotional difficulties that I think is a story that maybe is kind of universal.
Yeah. Now, I imagine you've spoken to many people now who have children with learning differences. What have you learned from them?
It's interesting that one of the things that prompted me to write the book was not only the parents of children with LD that I met through Charlotte, but also as I travel across the country with my fashions, you know, doing trunk shows in stores, I've met so many women who are touched by LD, whether their own children or their nieces or their friends. And I just know underneath that there's a side of it that's difficult that has nothing to do with the actual operational part of whether the child can read or not. That's hard, too, and that takes a lot of balancing. But the other part of and not knowing who to tell and how you say it, not knowing what it will lead to when they grow up, the extra pressure just on their lives of managing the extra therapy and appointments. So I guess what I sense and what was behind the book is this common strain of LD that isn't talked about, that's not the actual medical diagnostic, you know, treatment part, but the emotional toll it takes not only on the LD kid, but on the parents and on the family as a whole.
Yeah. Now, were the girls aware of the tension in the household? And what Charlotte and her sister Annie, were they aware of how Charlotte was different from other children?
Oh, absolutely. Everybody, you know, children know so much. They know before you know what you're thinking. They definitely knew, and When they were in preschool, they went to school together, and then Charlotte, of course, went off to a special school, but they played together on the weekends. We had family dinner at least 4 or 5 nights a week. We spent a lot of time together as a family. So we were all aware of Charlotte's difficulties. And Annie, from an early age, I think, you know, by the time Charlotte was 4 and Annie was 2, there were starting to be differences where Annie could maybe do certain things better than Charlotte. And in the course of writing the book, Charlotte remembers vividly the day she saw Annie reading a chapter book that she couldn't, and she couldn't read.
Mm.
And how that was so devastating to her self-esteem.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Annie, who loves her sister, it made her feel bad too. She kind of didn't know what to make. On one hand, she's happy she can read and do things, and on another, she felt bad because Charlotte couldn't. So I think from an early age, there were all these complex reactions to the LD that I had no idea. I kind of observed, but I had no idea how important they were, how they were much more or as important as the actual specifics of Charlotte's learning difference.
Yeah, it's got to be really important in the lives of siblings when a younger sibling becomes the older sibling, if you know what I mean.
It's primal. And I noticed on Saturday mornings when the two girls would play, that we usually got about 3 hours of their playing just in imagination games. And Charlotte always played the mommy in the imagination games. And I think it was a reaction. It was like a opportunity to restore the natural order of things, the big sister being in charge. And Annie would sort of pretend to be a little tiny baby. Mommy, mommy, help me. And it was so sweet. What I didn't know is that this was something that we could have talked more about from an early age. I could sort of see glimpses of it happening, but I didn't realize that talking about it and sharing reaction, noticing it, saying it out loud would have been better. I thought, oh, well, just don't mention it.
Mm. When and how did you talk with Annie about Charlotte?
I was trying to remember the age. I would say Annie was about 6, and Tom took her for a walk out on Long Island where we have a house. And he said he was going to explain that, you know, Charlotte learns differently. She's intelligent and she's fabulous and we adore her, but certain things are hard for her. And it's called a learning disability. Annie was very little, but I remember feeling a sense of relief in her, just that it had been formally acknowledged. We all knew, just like families, you know, but just that extra step of bringing it to consciousness, and if I were doing it over again, I would have brought it up and talked about it out loud more frequently, as a group, as a family.
Mm.
We didn't get to that till later.
Yeah. How did you and your husband talk about what was going on?
Well, in the course of writing the book, Tom and I have been married 21 years. We're very close. But in the course of writing the book, I realized that we spent most of our time, again, talking about the operational side, Charlotte getting therapy and what should we do and going to the school, blah, all the easy stuff. We didn't spend time talking about how hard it was living in this gray area, not having a diagnosis. Every year, her LD would manifest itself in a different way. At the beginning, she couldn't play games because she couldn't manage the piece around the board. She couldn't count and make her hand move 1, 2, 3. As she got older, it was hard for her to take taxis because she didn't know how to figure out the tip. Tom and I talked about the specifics, but we didn't talk about how scary that was for her, for us. What did it mean for the future? Would she ever be able to? We didn't talk about that.
Maybe,
why? I can't imagine.
Yeah,
that was silly.
Maybe it's self-preservation and you got to keep going and one day at a time.
Well, I think the way I was raised or however I adapted to my raising, I thought that if you said things, it would make them so. That if you admitted any kind of weakness or kind of acknowledged it, even to your loved ones, then you would just dissolve into a puddle of vulnerability and despair. And, you know, I don't have to be so black and white. It doesn't have to either be perfect or a disaster. It's okay with your loved ones to talk about fears and shames and anxieties. And I just didn't know that. I didn't realize that until I learned it through being with Charlotte.
How did that begin? How did that light begin to dawn?
It was a slow road. It started to take place as she was in school. The difference between Charlotte and me, many differences, but one is she couldn't hide her vulnerabilities. And so she learned to put up with them. I mean, it was painful, and it's not like it was easy, but she couldn't hide when she couldn't do something. And so she sort of, there she was, and she was still Charlotte. And it gradually dawned on me that she wasn't going to be an A student, and that was okay. She had all, as I started to see her other gifts, her artistic ability, her tremendous empathy for people. She's got just spider senses on what people are feeling or what they're worried about inside. I saw all these other strengths emerge that are not, you know, the ones that are conventionally measured. And I was thinking, oh, well, if she doesn't have to be an A student, maybe I don't either. What about that?
What, was there one moment of epiphany where you thought?
No, I guess it started when I had a panic attack. Mm-hmm. I was 47. I remember the day. I'll never forget it. I think it was my body. I don't know if anybody listening has ever had a panic attack, but it's just about the worst thing I've ever had to undergo. It's this nameless sense of dread. My heart started beating fast. I was just at home getting ready to go to work, and I felt like this overwhelmed with fear and anxiety, just out of nowhere. My heart beating fast. I thought, oh, I'm going to die. I'm fixing to die. This is it. This is how it happens. And it's a panic attack, and it's a thing, and it was my body signaling me that something wasn't being attended to. Mm-hmm. And I would say that was sort of the turning point for me, that the way I had been juggling my life wasn't working. The keeping it all in, holding it all up, not asking for help, not ever letting down to say, oh, this is really a drag. I'd never say that. Everything's, how are you, Dana? Oh, fine. I'm fine. And I'd sit up really straight. So when I had the panic attack, it was like my body collapsed to say, no, you got to look into this.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, so after that, I started slowing down. And then things, I think I started, you know, over the next few years, looking at Charlotte differently, looking at life differently. When I would walk Charlotte to the subway, I would be like halfway down the block and see the light fixing to change. So I'd start running in my high heels and my handbag all dressed up for work. And Charlotte would say, Mom, why do you have to run? Why? Just wait. The light's going to change back. And when she was little, I'd say, no, Charlotte, come on, we got to hurry. And gradually I started saying, you know, you're right. So it was a process.
Hmm. Today she's in college.
She is.
What is she studying?
She's just a freshman, so she's studying how to live on her own first, but it's been, oh my God, what a happy period. She's doing great. I think being away and on her own, she's discovering even more what she can do. You know, when you're in high school, she was measured on everything she was worst at, you know, math and tests where you have to fill in the bubble with the pencil. And now in college, where it's more ideas, and she's doing great, and she's loving living on her own. We're in close contact, but she's on her own, and it's fabulous.
Yeah. What did she think of the book?
You know, she was, from the minute I proposed it, she said, sure, I'll do that. Even though it really is revealing of, it's not just me, it's revealing of her as well. And she's such a courageous person and has grown to be at home with what she's good at and what she's not good at. The process of writing it, it was just like the final gift of her senior year in high school. It took about a year, and it brought us even closer together. I would get up early in the morning and type, sort of free write, and I'd put down something, and my neck would, I'd get prickles on my neck thinking, I can't say that. And I'd say no, because my commitment to myself was just say it. So I'd write it down, and then later in the day I'd read it, and I'd think, oh, yeah, that's sort of embarrassing, but it's not terrible, and it was true. And then I'd let Charlotte read it, and she'd say, Mom, I knew that. I knew you were freaked inside, or whatever it was. Mm. So it was a great way for us to get closer.
Yeah. What does she say was toughest about growing up? In particular, I'm thinking of high school years. That's a really tough time.
Such a nightmare, especially for girls. There's a cliquey stage that a lot of us females go through. I think the social aspect was hard because LD has a social aspect as well. Charlotte did go to special school, so every kid there had some form of LD, but there's all different types. That's really just an umbrella term. So I think going into situations and not being able to do something and eyes on her, and of course when you can't do something and people are looking at you, it makes it even harder. For instance, some days she would skip lunch because she wouldn't be able to figure out fast enough how much the pizza was, how much change she should get back, or she'd spill the money, it'd go rolling all over the floor, the kids, you know, situations like that I think were the hardest.
Well, this is The Afternoon Magazine. Our guest today, Dana Buckman. We're talking this afternoon about her memoir, Special Education, One Family's Journey Through the Maze of Learning Disabilities. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-9455. WILL. How did you make that decision that a special school was right for Charlotte?
We made it in conjunction with the speech therapist who we worked with on weighing the pros and cons, whether she could go to a mainstream school with help or whether she needed a special school. And in Charlotte's case, we decided she needed the special school, and it was definitely the right decision. Of course, there's so many different grades of LD. A lot of kids can make it in a mainstream school, or some go to special schools and then later join the mainstream. But Charlotte really needed the small classes through her whole high school career.
Hmm. You talked a moment ago about the social aspect of LD, and Richard Lavoie has praised your book. He's been a guest on this program, and we spoke about his book, It's So Much Work to Be Your Friend. Were there challenges for you and your family in that regard, in terms of friendships for Charlotte?
There were challenges, and in the typical mode that we were in, we didn't really talk about them as a group. Charlotte and I kind of buddied up on it a little together. It would manifest itself for the family, like when I remember we were away at a resort and Charlotte and Annie were playing in the swimming pool with some other kids and trying to play Marco Polo, and Charlotte just couldn't, at that point, hadn't figured out how to go the right direction, and one of the little boys said to Annie, "Is your sister retarded?" Mm. And I felt the whole sound in the whole area just get sucked up and go silent, and I didn't know what to say. Everybody heard it. All of us heard it. Charlotte heard it. I think she acted like she didn't. And Annie said, "No, she just doesn't know which way to go." And she was only like 7. But situations like that were where it was the most difficult. In her own circle, she sort of had a couple of friends, and that was okay. I think she protected herself by not in high school. She didn't go to any wild parties. She kind of stayed to herself and to a couple of close friends as a protection. And now it's actually in college that she's gradually coming out on her own, at her own time. Again, that was hard for me because in high school I was out whenever I could be. And, you know, as a parent, the hardest thing is you think your kid's going to be just like you. And all parents, not just LD parents, have to learn that the kid is, that your child is your child, and they have to do it on their own time and their own way, and they might have different wishes than you. Hmm. Seems so plain as I say it now, but when you're living it, it's not always that easy.
Yeah, can't see the forest for the trees. let's talk with a listener who's waiting for us in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. This to me is a really interesting subject because I'm also the parent of a child who had learning disabilities. We took a very different path. My child was mainstreamed all the way through because people felt that would be the very best, you know, the best environment for him. And I think it really ended up being the best environment for him. But it is so true that the parent just goes through so much at these meetings and all the kinds of things. It's just really difficult to sit there and, you know, in front of kind of like a barrage. It always felt like it was my child, myself, and then these five or six other people who were going to talk about the speech, or they're going to talk about the social aspect, or going to talk about something like that. And that part is just, I think, so difficult for a lot of parents, just to kind of deal with the individual education plan and all that, you know, the conference, and it's all supposed to be so positive, but a lot of times it just doesn't really feel that way when you're going through it. But I felt like we were just so incredibly lucky that at certain very important times in my child's life, especially in the junior high stage, we had some just incredible special education teachers in the Champaign School District who just really set my son up for incredible success. And they just, you know, they really focused on all his strengths, and which he had, luckily, like you sound like your daughter, too, a great many strengths. And, you know, as a family, we always just focused on the strengths. And that really kind of helped a lot. But it is very intimidating.
Mm.
And it's something you don't have any training for. I mean, even the experts don't know everything there is to know about LD. And then as a parent, I didn't know anything about it, and what you're describing, dealing with the school and the whole panel of teachers, and you're sitting there, you over there next to your little kid feeling surrounded, that feeling is really something you don't have any preparation for, and yet as a parent you have to stay in there and be involved in it.
I think, I felt like we were ready to be there with our kid. But I kind of feel for any kid who doesn't have a strong advocate with their parent and doesn't have a good support system in the home, because the support system has to be there in the home.
That is so true. And I've met parents who don't want to admit it, which is another sad aspect for it to take. Sometimes, in my experience, a lot of times it's the fathers, or sometimes the mothers, who just say, oh, I want my child to go to this school because they have a great athletic field. And this happened with one of the top academic schools in Manhattan. And I'm thinking, the kids, LD, it's not worth it. You know, what they need is that support and the building of self-esteem and learning specific ways to work around their LD, because it'll never go away.
Yeah, and I think for each kid it's very different. My son was just super social, and everybody and people were in general agreement. Like you said, it's nice if you get some agreement that it was important to be, you know, in the mainstream school, because he was getting so much out of these other aspects of it, that they didn't want to separate him out, or, you know, to just be totally in a separate classroom all the time. So, you know, I think every kid is just so different, and you just have to work with whatever strengths they have. But there is such an emotional aspect of it that I think is not really discussed that much. You know, the how it feels to be the parent of, or the family of, and you know, I think it's worth discussing for people, because I think people feel very isolated when they're going through it.
And I think if parents had a heads up that it's not just your child who's going to have it. Once you find out it's not just your child, you have to just, a lot of it's just an awareness. I think I had been aware of the impact it might have on Charlotte's sibling, that when you have a needy child, a special needs child, that child is needy, and you have to watch out and make sure you give attention to the child who doesn't have the special needs, because they deserve it and need it also.
One of the things that was really great in my experience, because this was my second child, and my first child had we were not living in this part of the country, we were living in a different part of the country, and they had, for the third grade at that particular school, they had an option, or a third or fourth grade, they had a co-taught class, and my daughter was placed in this class, just... that not because she had a special need herself, but because she was in this you know, that they were having this class. And at first, as a parent of the kid who didn't seem to have any problem, it was like, oh my goodness, you know, she's going to be, you know, this isn't going to be good for her. But it turned out to be the most wonderful class that she ever was in, because they just moved each of the children at their own speed, so that for her, you know, she didn't have to go along. You know, she just blossomed that year at, you know, because she was being moved at her own speed, treated as an individual. And so it was a great experience for her, because the special ed teacher brought that into the classroom of treating each person as an individual. And so it can be a great experience, actually, for all children to be in one of these co-taught classrooms. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wish there was a little bit more of that.
That's a great story, and very fitting. Good preparation for her when her brother came along.
And then it made it was so much easier for me, you know, than to have had that to have that initial positive experience with the special ed situation, to see this person as just being, you know, someone who is, you know, is really looking at each person as an individual, which is basically what we all want. But that's my story, and thanks for talking about this. I do think it's a worthy subject of conversation, and talking about the emotional ends of it is definitely something that needs to be done a little bit more, I think.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for calling in this afternoon. Other calls are invited, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. I would imagine that this caller talked about the emotional component of this, and I would imagine that something that would crop up from time to time would be great frustration on everybody's part. But especially, you know, I'm thinking here of Charlotte in terms of were there times when it felt like, you know, Mom, this just isn't fair, or I have to work so much harder than everybody else.
Of course that came up, just tremendous sadness and resentment and grief, that, and especially since she had her sister Annie, to whom things in school came so easily. In fact, I remember one night, Charlotte, in her special school, she had homework, but it wasn't, she didn't have to write 15-page papers. It would end up being a lot of time and effort on her part, but it wasn't really, you know, it didn't look like a high school paper from another school. So Annie was walking by, and Charlotte had finished her homework. And Annie said, "Charlotte, you have it so easy. I wish I was you. I wish I had your homework." And Charlotte says, "You wish you were me?" And they both looked at each other, and that was that. That was that conversation. So, times it looked like a blessing, but it's so hard. And it, as Charlotte said at one point, it's like a pop-up. You never know when a computer pop-up. You never know when your LD is going to just rise up and potentially embarrass you. She went to an art camp one summer. I thought it would be great. All the kids there had purple hair and green hair and piercings, and I thought, okay, this is going to be a non-judgmental, low-key group. It looks fabulous. And she later told me at the end of the summer she took a jewelry class, and the artist said, okay, measure out 8 inches, and gave Charlotte a ruler. Well, Charlotte looks at a ruler, and it looks just like a stick with stuff on it. She can't measure. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, I can't do that. And the teacher didn't get it. Thought, oh, is this kid being smarty, or what do you mean you can't measure? You know, in a way, it's even harder because it's a disability that you can't see. So the child is in the position of either hiding it or owning up to it or having to explain it to someone. It's just always there with you. And I think she gets very sick of that sometimes.
What kind of coping devices has she developed, or has the family developed, to help her in these moments where, you know, it's like, whoa.
Well, we finally, a very useful phrase is, I have trouble with that, or that's hard for me. So, I mean, at the beginning, I didn't want to, as the mom, I didn't know, should I say, oh, Charlotte has learning disabilities? It seemed so final, so total, like summing her up as to what's wrong. But just saying she this is hard for her, she has a hard time with that, kind of gets you off the hook. Also, there is a little more awareness of LD now than there was 15 years ago. I don't think a lot of people know what it is, but I think they've heard the term.
Yeah. Well, all of us can relate to, I have a hard time doing that.
Yeah.
And there's something, you know, there's lots of things that I'm not good at.
Well, yes, as it turns out. I remember Charlotte, during the college process, she was so upset that she couldn't go to an Ivy League school. She said, can I apply? I said, you can apply, Charlotte, but I don't think you're going to like it there because they do what you don't like to do. The whole point of it isn't what you're good at. But it just distressed her that whole part of life was closed to her.
Yeah. At the outset of the book, you give readers some reassurance, and maybe that would be a good point. Since we're running down on time, maybe this would be something that would be worthwhile reinforcing. I think that we've gotten this message along the way here this afternoon in our conversation, but you say in the introduction early on, if it weren't for Charlotte, who wears her emotions and vulnerability on the outside, unedited for all the world to see, I might never have learned to express my own feelings. And this is something that is true for the whole family as well. Would you talk about that?
It is so true. I mean, realizing that in my whole growing up with Charlotte, I finally learned to realize that she is not her LD. That's just one aspect, like her beautiful brown eyes. And my own deep-seated expectations were the things that were the problem. I was the one with the learning disability. And keeping everything bottled up, thinking it had to be a certain way, feeling like I had to live up to the expectations in the eyes of the world, was really stifling me and keeping me from living a full, rich, happier life. I mean, I was very happy, but it's a richer life when you allow more in, when you don't just bottle off everything that's not fabulous. So I feel so fortunate. It's brought us closer together. I think the Dana, Tom, and Annie show, we would have been all on this one track, and Charlotte sort of shook us into realizing that there's so many other ways to be and that achievement doesn't have to be come on paper and be the expected.
Yeah. Well, this shedding of a one-dimensional outlook on life, what has it meant for other areas of your life? For instance, your work life.
Oh, my goodness. There's some of my colleagues at work were there. We talk about the old me and the new me, and they laugh, and everybody is much happier at work with the new Dana. I much more take time to laugh. I let them do their jobs. I'm not quite as frantic about everything, and it's a much happier, richer place to work.
Nice boss.
Better boss, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting because I asked this question because I went to your website, and there's a statement from you, and I'll paraphrase this. There's a revolution taking place. Women have finally freed themselves from tight rules and let go of their old inhibitions. I've left some things out that refer to clothes, but wow, you know, there you go.
There it is.
Yeah,
and the more we women do that and support each other, I mean, we had it right in the 70s, sisters together. I mean, there's just a lot we can do, and sharing this experience I thought was a way to kind of touch the women I dress and love and admire and the other women who have LD children, other women and men. We can really support each other and sort of show each other the light.
There we'll leave it. Dana, thank you so much for talking with me this afternoon.
Thank you, Celeste.
You're very welcome. Dana Buckman has been our guest in this portion of the program. She's the author of A Special Education, One Family's Journey Through the Maze of Learning Disabilities. And all proceeds from the sale of the book go to the National Center for Learning Disabilities. 10 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time, settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thanks much, Celeste. From the board today, the futures came screaming back in the bean pit. Kind of a fun day to watch. If you've been looking at the technical side of the thing, you know we've been talking about this pennant that's formed in the soybeans on the lead option and on the harvest month in particular, and it broke again to the upside. We'll have to talk with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services of Bloomington, Illinois, during the closing mark report this afternoon about that pennant. You'll know just exactly what it looked like if you happen to subscribe to our Ag newsletter over the weekend. We dropped a graphic of that pennant in the newsletter. By the way, that's easy to get to and easy to subscribe to. The website is willag.org. Scroll down until you see subscribe. Just hit on that, and an email will come up, and you'll be automatically subscribed to the newsletter. We've got, about 1,700 folks that get that newsletter over the weekend. We think it's a great thing, and apparently they do, too. So if you haven't subscribed, go ahead and do it today. From the Chicago Board of Trade, now, futures finished like this. The beans were up about 13 to 14 cents. The corn up 3 to 4. Wheat in Chicago up 6 to 8 cents for the day. And in Kansas City, wheat rallied 3 to 5 cents. March contract in Kansas City, a 436.5 settlement price. They were up 3.5 today with a high of 436.5, the low at 428, and that high was the settlement at 436.5, up 3.5 cents. May wheat, a 440 high, a low at 430.5, settlement price at 439.75. They were up 5 for the day. March wheat in Chicago, 369, the high, a dime lower for the low at 359, and a settlement up on the high, 6.25 higher at 369 for the March wheat. May futures, 382 the high, the low at 71. Settlement price at $3.80. They were up 6.5 of the day. In July futures, a 392 high, low at 82. Settlement price at 391.75, up 6.5 for the day. September futures now, 402 the high, the low at 392.5. A settlement price there at 401.75, and they were up 5.5 cents in the SEP week for the day. December futures up 7, 414.5 the high. Low at 405, settlement price at 414, up 7 for the day. In the March contract, 423 the high, the low at 415, settlement price at 423, up 8 on the day. Corn pit now, March contract, 229 the high, the low at 222.5, settlement price at 228.5. They were up 4.25. May futures at 239.75 high, low at 233, settlement price at 239.25, up 4.5. In July, 249.5 the high, the low at 42.75. Settlement price at 249.25, up 4.75. Notice the trading range. They were on both sides of the market today. Earlier, they were down, couldn't keep them down, and they rallied back. September futures, 256 the high, the low at 250.5. Settlement price at 255.5, up 3.75. And the December contract, the lead option in the December, by the way, putting in an outside up day on the market. 265.5 the high, the low at 260. Settlement price at 265. They're up 3.5 cents, by the way. An outside up day, the higher high, a lower low than yesterday's trade, and a higher close. March contract, 271.25, the high, the low at 66. The settlement price at 270.75, up 3 cents. And the May futures in the corn pit, 3.5 cents higher. 274.5, the high, the low at 69.5. A settlement price at 274.5. March oats, 183.25, the high, the low at 178.5. Settled at 182.5, up 3 cents today. And the May futures, a 189.5 high, low at 185.25. Settlement price at 188.5, and they were up 2.25 on the day. Soy complex now, bean futures, a 13.5 cent rally, 593 the high, low at 72.5. Settlement price at 591. They were up 13.5 for that March contract on the lead option. May future, 607.5 the high, the low at 585.5, and the settlement price at 604, up 13. In July, 618.5 the high, the low at 97. Settlement price at 614.75, up 12.75. August soybean, 620 the high, the low at 3.5. Settlement price at 619.5. She rallied 14.5 cents for the day. In September futures, a 622.5 high, low at 609.25. Settlement price at 622.5, up 14.5 cents. November beans, 630 the high, the low at 09.25. Settlement price at 626.75. They were up 12.25 on the day. In the January futures, 634 the high, the low at 17. Settlement price at $6.31.5 a bushel for the Jan's 2007 contract, up 9.5 cents for that. Soy complex, March beans and the products, 176.90 for the meal on the high side, low at 171.40. Settlement price at 176.20. They were up $3.80. May futures, 179 the high, the low at 173.50. Settlement price at 178.10, up 350 for the day. The March bean oil, 24.40, the high, the low at 23.60. Settlement price at 24.37, 57 higher in the bean oil May contract. 24.80 the high, the low at 23.99. Settlement price at 24.75. They finished 60 cents higher. We'll talk with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock this afternoon, just a few minutes away, Central Time. In just a moment, the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange. I'm Todd Gleason.
Thank you, Todd. Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincolnland Agri-Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnlandAgriEnergy.com. Lower date today for livestock prices. March feeder cattle, though, they ended up, that contract ended up the day higher, up 2.5 cents. March feeder cattle, 107.20, the high 106.55, the low 107.15, the settlement that up 2.5. April, 107.80, the high 106.90, the low 107.50, the settlement that down 37.5. May, 108.50, the high, the low 107.55, the settlement 108.47.5, that down 10. April live cattle 86.90, the high 86.30, the low 86.80, the settlement that down 22.5. June 82.45, the high 81.70, the low 82.35, the settlement that down 27.5. April lean hog 63.25, the high 61.90, the low 62 even, the settlement that off 70 cents. May 69.20, the high 68.40, the low 68.72.5, the settlement that down 17.5. June lean hog 71.67.5, the high 70.60, the low 70.82.5, the settlement that off 52.5 cents. July lean hog 69.75, today's high, the low 68.70. Finishing today at 68.95, that contract down 30 cents. March pork bellies 90.90, the high 89.15, the low 89.42.5, the settlement, that finishing down 97.5 cents. The Dow is off 38 cents. Let's get things back on track here. 38 points at 11,015. The NASDAQ is off 10 points at 2304. The S&P 500 off 4 at 1287. 2 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time, you're tuned to WILL Urbana. Agricultural programming on WILL made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our technical director today is Henry Frayne, the producer for the program, Harriet Williamson. Here's Ed Kieser's forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon. In the north, cloudy with scattered snow showers and flurries. In central sections, mostly cloudy. And in the south this afternoon, a mix of clouds and sunshine. Highs ranging from 36 in the far north to around 60 in the far south. Tonight in northeastern Illinois and in northern Indiana, mostly cloudy with scattered flurries. Elsewhere, partly cloudy. Lows ranging from 20 in far northwestern Illinois to 32 in the far south. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, except for some clouds and flurries near Lake Michigan. Highs ranging from 34 in far northern Indiana to 50 in far southern Illinois.